Specifically, we're interested in some initial reactions from listeners to the governor's overall budget priorities. A lot of people say that he hasn't committed enough money to vital spending programs. Over the noon hour, a National Press Club broadcast featuring Indiana University President Miles Brand, the man who fired Bobby Knight.
On the next All Things Considered, the U.S. Postal Service dedicates a stamp to civil rights pioneer and Minnesota native Roy Wilkins. We'll have that story plus all the day's news on the next All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. 16 degrees and clear here at KNOW FM 91.1 Minneapolis St. Paul. Twin Cities weather for today. We should have temperatures holding steady between 15 and 19 degrees. Tonight, clear and cold. Looks like a low of 3 above to 4 below. Thursday, sunny, high in the 20s.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The Senate has confirmed Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson as the new Secretary of Health and Human Services. The Senate is also poised to approve Norman Mineta for Transportation Secretary and Elaine Chao as Labor Secretary. As Secretary of Health and Human Services, Thompson will be at the center of brewing battles in Congress over Medicare reform and prescription drug benefits for the elderly. He has also said he'll launch a safety review of the abortion pill, RU486. This gives women a non-surgical option to end early-term pregnancies. President Bush held his first meeting with the bipartisan congressional leadership today. They talked about education, foreign policy, and reforming the electoral process. NPR's Pam Fessler reports.
The president said this was his sixth meeting with lawmakers in 3 days and that he hoped to make such gatherings part of his routine.
I hope people are now beginning to realize that what I said, the executive branch is willing to work with the legislative branch to do what's right for the country is not hollow words. What I believe we need to do.
Afterwards, Republican and Democratic leaders called the meeting constructive. They said a number of issues were discussed, including electoral reform. Democrats said they told the president that many Americans felt disenfranchised in the last election and that changes should be made to voting procedures. Democrats say they're encouraged by the new president's efforts to reach across the aisle, but the two parties remain divided on issues such as tax cuts and school vouchers. Pam Fessler, NPR News, the White House.
The Los Angeles School District has reached a tentative contract agreement with its teachers. This averts a planned strike next month. Frank Stoltz of member station KPCC reports from Los Angeles.
Under the deal, the district's 43,000 teachers would get a hefty 11.5% one-year raise. With bonuses and incentives, it adds up to 15.3%. Former Colorado governor turned L.A. school superintendent Roy Romer negotiated the tentative agreement.
This is a wise settlement. It is one that brings our teachers up to the median, and it gets us a very large package of authority back in the district's hands.
Under the tentative pact, principals would have more authority over teachers' work schedules. But the school board was sharply divided over the deal, supporting it by a 4-3 margin. Opponents called it too expensive and warned second and third year salary increases to be negotiated later could trigger cuts in academic programs. For NPR News, I'm Frank Stoltz in Los Angeles.
An admitted white supremacist has pleaded guilty to federal hate crimes and murder charges today in Los Angeles. Buford Furrow Jr. shot a Filipino-American postal worker to death last year. He also sprayed a Jewish daycare center with bullets, wounding 4 children and 1 adult. On Wall Street, the Dow was up 2 points at 10,651. The NASDAQ is up 46. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Rockefeller Brothers Fund, providing support for NPR cultural programming through a Charles E. Culpepper Endowment Grant.
With news from Minnesota Public Radio, I'm Greta Cunningham. Governor Ventura says he's backing away from a campaign pledge to provide health insurance for all Minnesota children by the end of his term. Ventura says a 20% rise in health care costs for state workers and other priorities forced him to change his plan. Ventura says other initiatives like eliminating racial health disparities will help ensure more children under his administration. DFL 7th District Congressman Colin Peterson says he felt very comfortable during his first meeting with President George W. Bush. Peterson was one of a group of Democratic and Republican House members invited to meet with the president yesterday. During the meeting, Bush laid out his agenda on education, tax cuts, and Social Security. Peterson says he asked Bush if he would use the power of the White House to help with agriculture, comparing the dairy industry's price woes to the days of $10 a barrel for oil men. The president, who could relate to the reference, said he would. Peterson says his impression of Bush was that he was a straight-ahead, no-nonsense guy.
We're not always going to agree, but I really don't see, he doesn't appear to be a partisan like some people that you run into on both the Democrat and Republican side. I think he genuinely gets it and realizes that you got to take into consideration lots of points of view.
Peterson says he thought Bush had more sense for rural issues than former President Clinton. Winona County Board voted 3-2 to move the county's court functions back into a remodeled historic courthouse instead of building a new government center. The county's 112-year-old courthouse has been sitting idle after burst pipes caused water damage last September. The forecast for Minnesota calls for sunny skies statewide today, highs ranging from 10 in the west to the teens in the east. Right now in the Twin Cities, report of sunshine, a temperature of 15 degrees. That's the news update. I'm Greta Cunningham.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Sylvan Learning Centers, dedicated to helping students gain confidence and self-esteem by reaching their full academic potential. 1-800-EDUCATE.
6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Acton. Glad you could join us. Governor Jesse Ventura hits the road today to try to rally support for the two-year budget plan that he outlined yesterday. The governor is scheduled to speak at the University of Minnesota Duluth at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Later this week, he'll make several other stops around the state. Governor says it's important that people understand what he's proposing and important that they contact their legislators to let them know that they support his priorities. In fact, his budget plan is already drawing lots of kudos and lots of critics. Governor is calling for some major changes in state taxes, including more than $1 billion in tax relief. But he's also proposing very little new spending, this despite requests for some $6 billion in additional spending. Governor points out that, like all budgets, his budget does set some very real priorities.
I think it's important for us to go out there and answer people's questions and let people understand the big picture of what we're trying to accomplish here, rather than pulling out just little sound bites, which is what will happen, and then people read headlines and panic. They need to look and be educated on the entire budget. What the entire thing does, and the bottom line is this. When it's all said and done, yes, we reform taxes. Yes, we give tax relief. The bottom line, end all, to my budget is every Minnesotan will pay less in taxes and their cost of government will go down over the next 5 years.
Well, today on Midday, we'd like to gauge your reaction to the governor's budget. Now, I understand it's next to impossible to try to digest an entire $27 billion state budget in one day. But we've already heard, on the one hand, complaints that the governor is ignoring very real pressing needs. On the other hand, that he's not going far enough in reducing state taxes. And today, we'd like to get your thoughts on the governor's priorities. You think they're about right? Are they too skewed one way or the other? Give us a call here. I'd like to have you join our conversation as the governor goes out to try to sell his budget plan. What are your early thoughts on that plan? Give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Right now, Michael Koo, Minnesota Public Radio reporter Michael Koo, has a general overview of the governor's budget and some of the early legislative reaction to it.
During Ventura's first 2 years in office, state spending grew roughly 13% over the previous biennium, well outpacing the inflation rate over the same period. Ventura says that was a signal to tighten the fiscal reins this time around.
If I continued with that, that would be 26% over my watch. That would be government would grow a quarter of what it is now larger. That's unacceptable to me, and that was my priority. And certainly we can take 2 years and limit the growth of government.
The governor's proposed budget sends the bulk of the state's projected $3 billion surplus back to Minnesotans as a mix of rebates and tax cuts. That's significantly different from his first budget, in which ongoing spending proposals nearly equaled permanent tax relief measures. And Senate DFLers were quick to spot the change. Majority Leader Roger Moe says the governor should give more thought to additional spending requests.
Democrats believe in tax cuts as much as anybody, and there will be tax relief, tax reductions, and tax reform that come out of the Senate. The only thing we're concerned about is making sure that there is a balance, that yes, we should have tax relief, but we should also strategically invest in Minnesota's future.
Even GOP leaders, many of whom have called for fiscal restraint, questioned the governor's spending proposals. House Speaker Steve Swigum.
We're somewhat concerned about the lack of attention to education, both K-12 and higher education, about somewhat the lack of concern in relationship to our nursing homes.
Swigum says Republicans want to stay within Ventura's spending limits, but reallocate funds within that limit. Possible cutback targets include the governor's plan to extend welfare benefits beyond the current five-year limit for hard-to-serve families. Swigum also questioned Ventura's plan to increase the state's rainy day budget reserve.
I don't think that you're going to see us wanting to store, hide, place, put away, whatever word you want to use, more money of the people's into the state account as opposed to in their pockets.
Ventura wants to boost the reserves as a hedge against an economic slowdown, something many analysts are now predicting. Some lawmakers are already warning the next budget forecast, due in February, will show projected surpluses shrinking. And DFL House Minority Leader Tom Pugh says the governor's caution is appropriate.
It looks as though he's built an adequate cushion for what might occur, what's anticipated to occur in the February proposal. I think you can read almost $500 million worth of padding in his proposal. So I think he's well covered that way.
In addition to the larger budget reserve, Ventura wants to carry over roughly $100 million from year to year to cushion any slowdown. And he says he's prepared to go still further if the next round of budget forecasts are unexpectedly gloomy. At the Capitol, I'm Michael Koo, Minnesota Public Radio.
Now, before we go any further, we should note that if you'd like lots more specific information about the governor's budget, just check out our website, minnesotapublicradio.org, and you will find charts, graphs, loads and loads of specific information. Jean Merriam, Chief Financial Officer for ECM Publishers, joins us now. He, for years, was the chair of the State Senate Finance Committee, and as such was responsible for trying to sort through all the competing claims for spending increases and the like. Mr. Merriam, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Gary. My pleasure.
How did you weigh all these competing claims? I mean, it isn't like people are just coming up to the government hat in hand with frivolous ways to spend state money. In many cases, very real pressing needs. On the other hand, people saying, gosh, we can't afford to pay any more taxes. Legitimate position. How did you weigh those two competing claims?
Well, that's the among the most difficult jobs for our elected officials, legislators, because it's always clear what your constituents want. They want lower taxes and more services. and what you'll see over the next 4 months, as the legislature tries to sort this out, is weighing those competing claims. And because nobody wants to raise taxes, everybody likes to lower taxes, but nobody wants to say no to those constituents that want services either.
Now, the governor is going to take his message on the road this week. Does that make much difference if legislators are contacted by their constituents in the overall picture? Does that make a difference?
Oh yeah, there is nothing more important to legislators than to hear from their constituents. It has a significant impact on the process. And clearly, if the governor's got a lot of complicated things in his budget, and if he's going to be able to sell the general tenor of the budget as well as the significant detail, primarily on the tax side, he's got to get the public on board in order to get the legislature on board, no question.
At the end of the session, when the big crunch arrives, is it too cynical to say that whoever's got the best lobbyists will come out the best?
Oh, I think that may be a bit cynical. I think Lobbyists have a profound impact on the process, no question. But I think equally important, if not more important, is what legislators hear from the people back home. I think that has more impact than what they hear from the hired guns at the Capitol.
In the way the legislature is set up, all these various committees, two houses of the legislature, so on and so forth, is the legislature itself well suited to trying to put together all of these competing interests and weigh one against the other?
Well, the legislative process doesn't lend itself extremely well to the big picture, because immediately what happens is the budget gets separated into a half dozen or more significant pieces and sent to the committees with those jurisdictions, and they focus in on their particular bailiwick. And quite frankly, too often the big picture kind of gets left behind. So I think the executive branch is much better equipped to deal with big picture matters like how much are we going to spend, what's the right level of taxation, and the legislature spends a lot of its time homing in on the detail.
Finally, is it hard to remember as you weigh all these interests and try to digest all this information, hard to remember that you're talking about real money that comes from real people and programs that affect real people?
That's easily forgotten. I've always said the easiest thing to do is to spend somebody else's money. But at the same time, the constraint on the other side, people get, legislators get a lot of positive feedback when they decrease taxes or send out rebates, and a lot of negative feedback when they raise taxes. So there's a fair amount of appropriate tension between spending and taxing, and those are very difficult decisions for the legislature to make.
Thanks for your insight. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary.
Gene Merriam, who is now the chief financial officer for ECM Publishers, but for years he was trying to wrestle with these very decisions that we're asking you to consider this morning. He was the chair of the State Senate Finance Committee, as such responsible for trying to weigh the competing claims for tax cuts and spending increases and the like. And that is the issue before the House today. Interested in your thoughts in terms of overall priorities. Do you think the governor has struck about the right balance this year in his budget? Has he gone a little overboard on tax cuts? Has he shortchanged spending too much? Maybe he hasn't put enough in the way of tax relief into his budget and included too much spending. I'd like to have your thoughts on that as the legislature begins to wrestle with the governor's budget and as the governor begins his sales trip around the state. 651-227-6000. That's our Twin City area number. 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. First caller is from Hugo. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
Do you think the governor is on the right track here?
Yes, and kind of no pun intended, thinking about the light rail proposal as well. What struck me as I was listening to, and I already forgot the guy's name who was talking most recently, is that nothing happens until somebody sells something. I don't care if you're selling a product, a budget, or whatever. And I think the governor has got a big job ahead of him as far as his whole approach to selling it. I'm not sure how good he is at it, but I do think that he's right on the money, again, no pun intended, especially with regards to redistributing, you know, what's taxed, meaning mm-hmm. sales taxes. I really think that makes a whole lot of sense. And it also strikes me that, as in life and in anything that you undertake, any business venture or life venture for that matter, it's a gigantic balancing act. You know, there's no perfect way, there's no one way, but it all sounds good to me, and it makes sense to me, and I say go for it.
So on the spending side, mm-hmm. there are already a number of people saying, goodness gracious, you have, the governor, shortchanged us to the point where you're really going to hurt the services we can provide Minnesotans.
I guess I haven't studied it that closely, so I don't have an opinion. I mean, I feel like the state of Minnesota in general provides, you know, exceptional services from, you know, welfare related to education to whatever it needs.
Mm-hmm.
So even if, you know, maybe we lost a little on that end, I still think that we'd be, wouldn't we be way above or significantly above most other cities or states in that regard? I apologize because I haven't studied it closely enough, perhaps, to really respond.
Well,
that's just my 2 cents.
Well, Elizabeth, I appreciate your 2 cents worth.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Let's move on to Mel, who joins us from Edina. Mel, your sense, the governor, does he have it about right in terms of his priorities?
Bob, I think he's taken too simple an approach. Mr. Merriam was talking about this. Everybody wants tax cuts, but I'm very worried about our investments for the future. And when he's gone with a straight, I think it's a 2% growth across the board, things like nursing home care, things like preschool education, things like technology in our rural communities, these prepare us for what's coming tomorrow. And I think he's just swept all of that under the rug for tomorrow, and we're going to regret that while the sun shined, we didn't fix our roof.
Mm-hmm. Now, setting aside his tax cut proposals, let's assume that there were none of those. The spending requests, as I understand it, far exceeded, short of actually increasing taxes, the spending requests far exceeded the revenues available. How would you suggest that legislators and the governor come up with some priorities to determine, well, gosh, we can't put all of our money in early childhood because then we wouldn't have enough for the nursing homes or for the highways, whatever. Any suggestions there for the officials?
I think they had it about right last time when they gave half of it back to us as tax cuts, which were appreciated and are always desired. But we also needed to spend about half of what we have available to get ready for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I would put out the criteria in that as it impacts people who are in need, as I think of my 90-year-old mother, as I think of little kids that I know that don't have insurance, this is a time when we could afford to deal with those priorities. And we're simply taking a formula approach. And when the Speaker of the House, who's a good conservative Republican, warns us that the cuts are too deep for nursing care and for education, I think we should question whether the governor has got this exactly right by taking a simple 2% across every program we can think of. The world is changing. I don't think we can just do what we did yesterday, plus 2% in areas like technology, in areas like early childhood, like ensuring our kids and taking care of our older folks.
Okay. Thanks, Mel. Appreciate the comments. Let's move on to Lorraine, who's on the line from Alexandria. Good morning, Lorraine.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me all right?
You're coming through fine.
Okay. Well, my comment is has to do with what I see as the governor's kind of approach to presenting this budget information. And what I see is kind of an adversarial tone to how he presents the information. It's almost like, this is my plan. I know what the big picture is. Now kind of come at me and attack me. I sure would appreciate it if there would be more sitting down with the leadership at the state and the House, with the state and House leadership in the state of Minnesota, to try to come to some agreement about what our priorities are, because I think there's some that really stand out, and the previous caller mentioned some that I think are very important. It seems like he's sort of looking for a fight a little bit on this budget, and it's what troubles me about his style.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he has emphasized tax relief too much at the expense of needed government spending?
Yes, I do. I think that, just for example, the University of Minnesota's reaction to this, I think, was very appropriate, and I also believe that there needs to be much more emphasis on early childhood programs, more attention to the education programs in our state during a time when we're experiencing some very good times fiscally.
Okay.
So, yes, I do think he's emphasizing it without there being the proper balance being struck here.
All right. Thanks, Lorraine.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Let's move on to a caller from Minneapolis. Chris, how would you assess the governor's overall priorities? Do you think he has it about right?
Yeah, I sure do. I think that he's right on target. With a $3 billion surplus, I moved from Indiana, which has a 5% income tax, and now moved up here 2 years ago with a 6.5%. I think that we're either collecting a lot of the income tax, et cetera, or we need to start focusing on more priorities. Change starts somewhere, and with this plan, I think that he's on the right track. What he's probably going to do in the future is start targeting more needed areas, and I would like to see more in the health care and also in the police and the fire department and the childhood and also in the cleaning up the environment. Those are some areas that I would like to see some of the surplus being spent instead of just getting all tax rebates, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chris, I need to ask you, I think I pointed out earlier that the total spending requests that were turned in, something on the order of $6 billion, far in excess of revenues available. Is there a guiding principle that you think the governor and legislators should bring to bear in terms of which programs should get priority for that money?
I think that the younger kids, the elementary schools need a lot more attention. Focus on the poorer schools and the ones that need help instead of trying to send them off to private schools, and that gets into a different topic. But mm-hmm. I think that early educational programs need to be one of the top priorities.
Even if it would mean perhaps shortchanging higher education, University of Minnesota, transportation needs, and the rest?
Well, we've got, like everyone's saying, the balancing act is a real hard thing to go. But without an education, then we don't have any starting point to get better somebody educated to do the better roads or better technology. And I think that we need to focus there first.
Okay.
And after that, then we can start pinpointing the other issues, like I brought up before, health care, et cetera.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Not a problem.
Let's go on to Dwayne. Dwayne is on the line from New Brighton. Good morning, sir.
Hi. Good morning.
Do you think the governor is on the right path here?
Yeah. And my comment to you is this. I wonder how many listeners have actually read the budget.
Oh, probably not very many.
I think that's a fallacy. And while the governor...
I don't think anybody actually has read the entire budget
yet. Well, why don't they do that before they start complaining? Okay, now my point is that while he's not formally educated and kind of a rough cob, I really think we ought to give him his day in court and read the budget and then see if his whole idea of the total picture doesn't have some merit.
You think
it
does?
And I think that people who complain a lot ought to do their homework, and that includes Udolph also.
Have you read?
He's real good at yelling a lot, so he'll get more.
Dwayne?
Yeah.
Have you read the entire budget?
No, but I'm not complaining either. All I'm saying is, before you run off at the mouth, why don't you get your facts together? And I think I like less taxes and less government. And in summary, I think that people ought to listen before they speak.
Uh-huh. But I'm just wondering, you know, from what you've heard and what's been reported, from what the governor himself said yesterday, he talked extensively about what he said in his
budget. Yeah, I listened to him.
You think he's mostly on the right track?
Oh, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he's got a rough, barbaric style, and if he could polish that up a little bit, he'd get a lot further.
Okay.
You know, he's a rough cob.
But you like the emphasis on the tax cuts, even though there are people who are saying there are a lot of pressing needs that are going to be unmet by his budget.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's got a pressing need. But in life, the 80-20 rule applies. If you get 80%, maybe you're pretty lucky.
Okay. Thanks, Dwayne.
Thanks much.
Let's go on here to Mike, who joins us from Forest Lake. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
What's your you think the governor's got it about right or too skewed one way or the other?
Well, in a general sense, his courage to take on the property tax issue at this point is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very supportive of that. I would like to see him put more money into some vocational education, particularly in our high schools, which seems to be dropping and cut out because of a little bit higher cost. But working in the trades, I see the average age of our fellow workers in the upper 40s and early 50s, And we're just not getting the message out to youth, and they're not getting to try on any of these things like carpentry, plumbing, heating and ventilating and so on, even the medical careers, even the computer stuff, because so much of this has been cut out of the high schools. And it's an expensive thing. And I understand there's a categorical aid that could help fund this and has in the past, but the governor or his people don't care for that for some reason. And I'm not sure why that is.
Now, Mike, there's only, as you I'm sure are aware, there's only so much money available. How would you suggest that the governor and legislators set the priorities to spend what money is available? Obviously, you'd like to see some more money for vocational technical education. Other people are saying, well, gosh, we should use that money to make sure that all the kids have health insurance, or we should put more money into higher education, University of Minnesota, or transportation projects, or we should increase the tax cuts that the governor is calling for. Do you have any sense of a principle that the officials should bring to bear when they have to wrestle these decisions to the ground?
Well, I do agree with a couple callers ago about this notion of investing in the future. And if we don't do it now, it's going to be real hard to do that when a recession or a little bit tougher times come along, because we have less funds at this time. I think you have to take care of the most dire needs first, of course, and then look at things that can solve the problems. And even though the schools and early childhood funding is very important, I'd suggest that if more individuals in the long term were well-trained and could get good, solid-paying jobs and help build our state, we'd have fewer people in welfare, we'd have fewer people not able to read at young ages and so on, because we'd raise our entire standard of living. But that's not something that happens overnight, and I think it won't show up by the time he's out of office. That's a long-term investment, and maybe that's not very attractive.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the comment.
Thank you.
We are asking you to be on the program today. Now, we have a full bank of callers, so don't call right now. You'll just get a busy signal and you get frustrated, but do try right after the news. The number to call would be 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. And what we're trying to get today is a sense from you as to whether the governor has his budget priorities about right. Now, we recognize that probably you haven't read the entire budget word for word. I don't know that anyone has, actually. You know, in terms of his general priorities, has he got it about right? Would you like to see more emphasis on tax cuts, maybe more emphasis on new spending? And if so, which programs? How do you make these decisions? There's only so much money available. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to more of your comments here in just a couple of minutes.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Minnesota's Certified Registered Anesthetists, celebrating National Nurse Anesthetist Week and more than a century of safe and effective anesthesia care.
It's bluegrass, it's folk, it's Cajun, it's live at the Fitz, Minnesota Public Radio's newest concert series at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. February 3rd, bluegrass sensation Rhonda Vincent and The Rage. February 10th, folk singer Greg Brown with Garrison Keillor. And February 17th, Cajun music with Beau Soleil. For information, call the Fitzgerald box office at 651-290-1221 or check our website at minnesotapublicradio.org and click Live at the Fitz.
Reminder, Minnesota Public Radio is member-supported. If you've recently sent in your membership renewal, we thank you. News headlines now. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta.
Good morning, Gary. President Bush's pick for Interior Secretary Gail Norton received bipartisan endorsement today from a Senate committee. Barring any new serious revelations, Norton's confirmation by the full Senate is all but assured. The Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee voted 13-2 to advance Norton's nomination. President Bush says federal directives that require wholesalers to sell power to California's nearly broke utilities will stay in effect for two more weeks, but won't be extended again. Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham said today he has been assured by California's governor that 2 weeks is all that's needed to restore the financial health of the utilities and keep the power flowing. The directives, first issued by the Clinton administration, require power generators and natural gas companies to continue selling to California's two investor-owned utilities, even though they are teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. White supremacist Buford Furrow has entered a guilty plea in Los Angeles to murder and hate crime charges. He shot and killed a mail carrier and wounded five other people in a Jewish community center full of children during a 1999 shooting rampage. Furrow pleaded guilty to 16 federal counts. The plea will spare him the death penalty. In regional news, Governor Ventura is in Duluth today to talk about his $27 billion budget proposal. Legislative committees are dissecting the plan today. The document is heavy on tax cuts and light in new spending. Ventura says his budget is lean. His two-year plan focuses on tax cuts, including a phased-in income tax reduction of half a percentage point in all tax brackets. The forecast from Minnesota calls for sunshine this afternoon. High temperatures today ranging from 10 in the west to the teens in the east. At this hour, Duluth reports sunshine and 13 degrees. Skies are overcast in Rochester and 16. It's cloudy in St. Cloud and 11 degrees. And in the Twin Cities, sunshine, a temperature of 15. Gary, that's a look at the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. 24 minutes before noon. This is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. And today we are talking about the governor's budget, specifically interested in whether or not you think the governor's priorities are about right. He released his budget yesterday. Heavy emphasis on tax reform, tax relief, tax changes. Pretty much a hold-the-line approach to state spending. Not much increase in state spending this time. The governor noted that last year, in many instances, state spending was increased significantly, and he said it's time for the government, for at least for the next 2 years, to more or less get by with the money they have, reprioritize a little bit here and there, but emphasis this year on tax relief. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you think the governor is on the right track or whether or not some big changes are needed in the governor's budget, give us a call here, 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. And again, just a reminder, if over time you want to bone up on the governor's budget, what's actually in there, check out our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. Donovan's on the line from Gilbert. Good morning, Donovan.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine.
I have to agree with the governor and his plan. It's a good place. It's a good base to start from, and I'm sure there'll be some changes, but I think it's a good...
Whoops.
Yep. I'm going to lose you here.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Donovan.
Yep, but I agree with this plan.
Okay.
I'm on a cell phone. I'm going to fade out.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Take care.
Yep.
Andrew's on the line now from Minneapolis. And, Andrew, you think the governor's about right in his priorities?
Well, not as they seem to show up in what he's talked about with the budget. I do think he's right a lot of the time about a lot of things. And one thing I heard him talking about recently was the fact that so much of Minnesota's economic success has to do with its workforce and its people. But I'm just worried that he's forgetting a little bit how we got there. And so much of our current strength in those areas is built on the massive public investments we made in education, especially building a university system 30 and 40 years ago. And to hear at a time when, again, people are doing well, people are buying big SUVs and building big houses in the suburbs, and there's money floating around, that we need to give the university a quarter of what it asked for and that we're not in a position to expand early childhood education. I just think we're forgetting how we got to where we are, and we're not thinking ahead in the ways that we need to right now.
Now, there are a good many people, as you know, Andrew, who would argue we have also been historically overtaxed, and it's time, since we have extra money, to reduce taxes, get it back more, get those tax rates more in line with other states.
Well, it is a question about what it means to be overtaxed. We pay somewhat more in taxes than a lot of other states, but life in Minnesota is better than in a lot of other states. I don't think most of your callers would want to move to Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama. A lot of the states with lower tax rates, and there are good reasons for that. We've got better services. We have better opportunities. We have, you know, the kinder, gentler society that President Bush used to talk about, and we've got it because we invest in public things, in schools, in infrastructure, in libraries, in keeping our cities safe, and improving access in our rural areas to education and opportunities. I think we need to keep doing that because I don't think we want to trade what we've got for slightly lower taxes that in the end is going to cost all of us in a weaker economy.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate the comments.
Thanks.
Let's move on now to another caller from Minneapolis. Alex, you're up next. Do you think the governor is about right in terms of his approach to setting state priorities?
Yes, I just wanted to say that I don't want my tax money back. I'd much rather have it invested in the state. Like the previous caller said, I think that we're much wealthier as a community if the government uses our money. And I think that wanting tax relief or tax cuts is just a way for, you know, immediate gratification for voters.
Well, in terms of spending, state spending, then let's assume there are no tax cuts proposed or anything of that sort. How would you go about setting priorities on what the state should spend its money on? Now, again, the requests for spending far exceeded any existing revenues. So, assuming we're not going to actually increase taxes, how would you go about setting priorities on what the state should spend its money on?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think I'd definitely go to the legislators and ask them what their constituents are asking for, because, you know, the citizens are the people that live with the problems and that know what's going on. And I think that education should always be number one. It's a really long-term investment, so sometimes it gets overlooked and pushed aside, but that would always be number one for me.
Okay, take care of that and then see what else is available.
Definitely.
Okay, thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Appreciate your comments. Let's move on to David, who's on the line from Richfield. Good morning, David.
Hi there.
Think the governor is about right in terms of his approach to budgeting?
I don't know that I think he's about right. I know that I do like his emphasis on reducing our dependence on property taxes. I'd much rather pay a tax that's based on my ability to pay. But where I'm really kind of disappointed is support for higher education and the support for rebuilding our infrastructure. I'm particularly concerned about road maintenance and bridge maintenance and things like that, which really, if you avoid building the infrastructure, you're not helping tomorrow at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are a number of competing claims to the state dollar. The folks who had looked at early childhood education suggest the state ought to dramatically increase spending in that area to make sure that kids are ready for school so they get a good education when they actually go to school. There is the school of thought that says we ought to be spending a whole lot more in terms of developing a long-term care program, beef up the nursing homes, get a lot more money into so-called community services for the elderly,
right,
and the rest. Now, how do you balance those competing claims against the need for bridges and roads and the rest?
It is a gentle balancing act, and I suppose eventually, given our system of government, which has survived us for many years, you end up compromising and getting a little bit for all. And I can't help but think back to I think it was Humphrey who said if everyone was a little bit upset at the end of the discussion, then we did right by all. And that's really the way our government works, like it or not. And I think it's been very effective.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your comments. Let's go on to another David. This David in Minneapolis. Good morning, David.
Hi, good morning. Boy, I'll try to keep this short. First of all, Andrew was right on the money in his comments. Investing in Minnesota, I've seen a lot of other states and worked in a lot of other states, and we have it so good here, and it's not an accident. The governor should bask in the glow of our wonderful workforce and wonderful educated people we have here. I would hope that future governors can look back at him and say that he helped keep it going by investing in that. This past year, I hit a personal milestone in personal income, and I used to think, I can't wait to get there so I can pay that much in taxes. And now that I'm there, I still feel the same way. I'm very lucky that I get to pay those taxes and I've earned that much in this economy. Tax cuts, given that people are having trouble putting food on the table, people who don't, you know, people who are looking because they need an extra speedboat or an extra SUV or a larger house, we don't need the money back. People who are struggling to take care of their kids, single family households and such, and get their kids educated, they need the money if there's going to be any tax cuts at all. The people who are at the bottom need it.
Now, David, I don't want to keep you on the line here long, in part because your phone sounds kind of weird, but it's not your fault. I do want to get a quick comment from you, though, and that is to say, there is an argument out there that says if we don't lower taxes, especially for people at the higher income levels, what we're going to do is drive away all the people we need to build businesses in this state, the people who are successful, and the governor argues that we are essentially penalizing success in this state and that long term, That's really going to hurt us.
Could not disagree more. Where are you going to go? This is a fabulous place. Sure, you can go to Seattle or San Francisco. I know people have done that. Costs a lot more to live there, although it's a great place to live. And other callers said, go to Alabama, go to Arkansas. I think so many people in this state have no idea how truly wonderful the Minneapolis Twin Cities, St. Paul metro area is, the state as a whole, how good we have it.
Okay. Thanks, David.
It's fabulous here.
Appreciate the comments.
Thank you.
Let's go on to Jim, who's on the line from Golden Valley. Jim, you think the governor is about on target?
Well, I think he is. He's got some pretty good ideas, and I think it'll make people talk about where this money's going. Me personally, I'd like to hear percentages. You know, if we could break it down like a pie chart, so I'd have an understand what $50 million here and $23 billion there, what it means. You
well,
know, it's everybody just jumps up and down and says, oh, all these big numbers. Whereas if they could say, well, we've got 10% going to education, we got 15% going to infrastructure, we got 25% going here, mm-hmm. and 40% going to government, then I could understand it.
Well, check out our website, minnesotapublicradio.org, and I think you'll find some handy pie charts there. Although, even then, Jim, this is, of course, one of the problems with budgeting. You see what kind of exists and what's being proposed. But what is always difficult to figure out is what's been asked for and what's actually needed. And, of course, that's the priority situation, or those are the arguments that the officials wrestle with. And any guiding principle for those folks in your mind as they try to decide, well, gosh, we should really emphasize tax relief, or we really ought to emphasize more government spending, and these are the things we ought to spend our money on?
Well, if we looked at last year's budget and where things were spent, we have actual facts for that, whereas this other stuff is kind of pie in the sky, because if the whole economy goes south, then we're going to end up with egg on our face no matter which way we go, because nobody knows what it's going to be. Whereas if we look at last year's figures and the projection is, say, we're going to increase revenues by 5%, then you have a good idea. I mean, if all of a sudden the university, for example, wants a fairly large chunk of money, we can say, well, that's, you know, a 10% increase, whereas the income for the state is only 5%.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can see that it's out of proportion, and we can start analyzing where their large percentage is, and we can have a better idea of what this money is going for. We can start looking at it in detail.
Okay.
But the previous caller had some really good ideas, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. We don't need to get money back, and I'd rather see it go into education and go into some other things. I certainly I'm not in the upper income bracket by any way, shape, or form. But the thing is I'd rather see the state using the money for, like I say, education and this stuff. And one thing I disagree with the governor, I don't think they ought to repeal the ceiling on license plate taxes. Because if you can drive around in a $60,000 automobile, you can certainly pay a couple of bucks for the tabs.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Bye.
Let's go on here to Jeff, who's on the line. Jeff, do you think the governor is on the right track?
Well, I just have three observations.
Okay.
One, we have a budget. The legislature says, here's how much money we need. And once they accumulate that much money by taking it from us, then they should be satisfied to be able to do everything they said they were going to do, just like a business would. Or every home has to put together a budget and say, here's how much money we need to do what we're going to do. Two, I'm uncomfortable with the concept of calling this the state's money. The state doesn't have any money except what it takes from its citizens. And three, since they're going to spend it anyway, I just as soon see them put it into expanding the freeway system. When I moved here in 77, there was a two-lane freeway ringing the city. And here we are 25 years later with a two-lane freeway ringing the city and traffic backed up and people complaining. If you're going to do something that will grow commerce.
Thank
and
you.
I agree with the previous caller, too, on those. Observation of look at last year's budget, what did you spend? Use that as a tool for deciding how much money you need this year and give the rest back, because it's my money, it's your money, it's not the state's.
Mm-hmm. There is the argument, though, Jeff, that although it is the taxpayer money that the state is doling out in one form or another, that rather than giving it back, there are so many unmet needs, including transportation, that the state ought to be spending more and not sending so much back to taxpayers.
So what I'm hearing you say is the budget they put together last year was not an honest budget. They didn't say this is what we really intend to do, what we really need. What they did is they put together a budget to get themselves reelected. If they really want to be honest and say, here's what we need to run the state and not a penny more.
Well, not necessarily. In this year, for example, spending requests exceeded existing revenues by about $6 billion. So obviously there's not enough money to fund all those requests. And the same situation traditionally applies where requests far exceed revenues.
Well, my kids request, you know, VCRs and TVs in their room and stuff, mm-hmm. but a request isn't a need. You got to look at what's the need for the state. And like the previous caller said, look at last year's budget. Where did the money have to go? And that's what legislatures are for, to say this is a need, this is a want, and to decide the difference.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. Tony, you're up next. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you.
You think the governor is about on the right track?
Well, you know, I think in some respects he is not. First of all, I think that his commitment to this tax cut idea is actually politics as usual, and without him really understanding it, what he is doing is making himself a short-term hero. Most people cannot go against the idea of tax cut. I mean, who says, no, not a tax cut. I want charge me more. That's the first thing for me. The second thing is that I just recently moved back to the Twin Cities, and what I know for sure is that it is significantly a better quality of life here. And that one of the reasons why is because of the way that we, the overall community's investment, and I think a number of people have said this, but the slightly higher taxes that we pay here make things better in that it creates a smaller gap between the rich and then the working poor. When you live in San Francisco or in Phoenix or in Chicago or in some of the other cities that even major cities that people are talking about, and definitely Arkansas and Alabama, hopefully you're not from there and you don't feel bad about it, but what happens is that a person or a family in the Twin Cities making $40,000 or $50,000 a household owns a home, owns a car, and lives a good quality of life because of the other services and the way things have happened here. And it creates a better quality of life because you don't get that sense that no matter what you do, you have nothing. And that is something about the Twin Cities that is an unbelievable, ununderstood quality of life here. The other thing is that really, at this point, I agree with the other callers as well. The money that we have collected, we need to look at that and make an investment in the future. We can then downscale taxing, in the coming years, if we believe that it makes sense to do that based on what's coming up. But the idea of making significant tax cuts, his commitment to a 5.4% growth, all of those things are, and like I said, I feel like they're great politics. They sound good, especially when, you're not going to be around in 20 years. But right now, I don't think people are complaining about it, and we need to find a happy medium and make it work.
Okay. Thanks, Tony.
Yep.
Let's get at least one more caller on here before we wrap up. Craig, your comment. Do you think the governor's on the right track?
There's still money for NPR in the budget?
I don't know. I think so. Governor said on our program here a month or so ago there would be.
He ran... And during the campaign, a campaign I worked on, he said there wouldn't be any money.
Uh-huh.
He ran and said there wouldn't be any, and now there's some in there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And as a person who worked on his campaign, I voted for him. I worked on his campaign for two things, the rebate and the end of funding to NPR.
So now
I'm being told that this rebate, that we're going to invest the money, that's called squandering to most of us. They're going to invest the money in a lot of programs, including programs that compete with the private sector all over the place, not just NPR, but throughout the state's government.
Mm-hmm.
There are programs that compete with viable programs in the private sector. And as a person who's a Ventura voter, I'm feeling a little bit let down here. I'm like, it was the rebate, Jesse. Have we forgotten what we elected you for? It was the rebate.
Well, he is proposing the return, the rebate again this year, $924 million, as I recall.
There was 2.1 on the table, right?
No.
There was a potential of $2.1 billion rebate.
Okay.
That was what was on the table. Based on last year's budget numbers, there was a potential of a $2.1 billion rebate. And now we're being told we're getting a good deal for a rebate that after it goes to the legislative process, does anybody really think it's going to be over $700 million?
Okay.
I don't think so.
Craig, we're out of time, but I appreciate the comments.
Yep.
Thank you.
Well, if you would like to take a closer look at what the governor has included and not included in his budget, check out our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. Of course, the budget discussions are underway fast and furious at the Capitol. The governor has taken to the road today. He'll be out on the road all week trying to rally support for his budget. And our coverage will continue here on Minnesota Public Radio. Tomorrow, we'll be talking with the University of Minnesota President Mark Udoff, who is not happy with the governor's budget proposals.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 24th of January, 2001. It's Chinese New Year today, the first day in the Year of the Snake. And in Chinese homes, there is a thorough house cleaning today, sweeping the dirt of the past year out of all of the corners. Good luck money is given to children. Everyone should be on their best behavior. No cursing, no yelling, no telling of lies, and no use of knives or scissors or other sharp objects. It is the feast day of St. Francis de Sales, the patron saint of writers and journalists, who in 1609 wrote his Introduction to a Devout Life, in which he said that spiritual perfection was possible not only for the cloistered and the contemplative, but also for people busy with the affairs of the world. It's the birthday of zoologist Desmond Morris in Wiltshire, England, 1928, who in his bestseller, The Naked Ape, wrote, "Human beings are animals. They're sometimes monsters, sometimes magnificent, but always animals. They may prefer to think of themselves as fallen angels, but in reality they are risen apes." It's the birthday of the abstract expressionist painter Robert Motherwell, born in Aberdeen, Washington, 1915. The birthday of Edith Wharton, born Edith Newbold Jones, New York City, 1862, author of The Age of Innocence, Ethan Frome, and her autobiography, A Backward Glance. It was on this day in 1848, a man named James Marshall, standing in the South Fork of the American River in Northern California, yelled out, "Boys, by God, I believe I've found a gold mine," and it was the start of the California Gold Rush. It's the birthday of playwright Pierre-Augustin Caron de Beaumarchais, born in Paris, 1732, who wrote the stories for The Marriage of Figaro, which Mozart set to music, and The Barber of Seville, set to music by Rossini. And it's the birthday of the playwright and poet William Congreve, born in West Yorkshire, England, 1670, most famous for his Restoration comedy, The Way of the World, in which the lovers Mirabelle and Millamant establish an unconventional marriage arrangement, people for whom manners were more important than morals. It was controversial in its day, but famous for its sparkling lines. It was William Congreve who wrote, "Defer not till tomorrow to be wise, tomorrow's sun to thee may never rise." He wrote, "Heaven has no rage like love to hatred turned, nor hell a fury like a woman scorned." He wrote, "Music hath charms to soothe the savage breast, to soften rocks or bend a knotted oak," and "thus grief still treads upon the heels of pleasure, married in haste, we may repent at leisure." Here's a poem for today from the early 1600s, a poem by Thomas Campion. "Never love unless you can bear with all the faults of man. Men sometimes will jealous be, though but little cause they see, and hang the head as discontent, and speak what straight they will repent. Men that but one saint adore make a show of love to more. Beauty must be scorned in none, though but truly served in one. For what is courtship but disguise? True hearts may have dissembling eyes. Men, when their affairs require, must a while themselves retire, sometimes hunt and sometimes hawk, and not ever sit and talk. If these and such like you can bear, then like and love and never fear." Thomas Campion's poem, never love unless you can. That's the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Research by Ellie Jackson. Be well, do good work, and